Welcome to the 600th edition of the Food Chain Radio Program. Special occasions like number 600 give us cause to pause for reflection. And so today we pause to reflect on who will feed us in 25 years.
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 600th edition of the Food Chain Radio program right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Kowloon who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Hello, everyone.
Where'd you get those cute fingernails?
Grew them.
Also, producer Carol Stafford.
Hello.
Parmalee Taff.
Hello.
And a studio audience today, we have Rolf Schwenninger. How's that? I got it, didn't I, Rolf?
Yes, you did.
I got it. Rolf is a farmer from Colorado, from the high mountain valleys of Colorado, where he grows beans and spinach and all kinds of things. And he's visiting us here today just because we are instituting a new policy, Carol. The new policy is we're going to have open studio to all farmers on the principle that every farmer I have ever met is the most interesting person in the world. So therefore, we'll welcome all farmers to the Food Chain. Whenever they want to sit in on an edition of the Food Chain, they're welcome. And Rolf is number one.
Howdy.
Folks, I recently attended the annual meeting of our local Farm Bureau. The event speaker was the CEO of a large company that sells produce around the world. Chances are very good that you have eaten the produce of his fields, regardless of where you live in this great land of ours. The subject of his presentation to the assembled farmers, who call themselves growers these days, was, where will we be in 25 years? So he's looking at these farmers, among whom are some of the most efficient and productive in the world. And he's saying to them, where will we be in 25 years? The CEO looked at the farmers in the eyes and said to them, well, we'll still be here, growing food. But it's not very likely, given what's happening to the price of oil, that we will be shipping our food around the world. We will be growing food for our own metropolitan marketplace. What the CEO was saying, in essence, was that our food chain is going to undergo a fundamental change, and that we would no longer be growing food on one side of the country or one side of the world and shipping that food to consumers on the other side of the world. And so we ask, kind of from the other perspective, who will feed us? The CEO of that large agribusiness concern said, where will we be? And so today we ask, who will feed us? Today being the 600th edition of the Food Chain, we have brought in a very special guest to help us answer this question. That very special guest is you. That's right, folks. Today you are the guest on the Food Chain, so grab yourself a cup of coffee, pull up a chair, and look 25 years into the future. Who do you see feeding us in 25 years? Our phone numbers today, which is how you participate as a guest on this program, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080 on California's Central Coast. Once again, the numbers, 800-624-2665 and 831-479-1080 here in California's Central Coast. There are two questions we can ask ourselves that will help us see 25 years into the future. And we need some kind of tools to look into the future. So we'll start with questions. What is happening today that will affect the food chain in 25 years? How about hydrocarbon energy? It's been said, probably by me, that what we really eat for breakfast is oil, because oil or hydrocarbon energy is a part of every link in our food chain. Yesterday, it cost $2,500 to ship a load of produce from one side of this country to the other side. Today, that same truck cost $8,500 to ship from one side of the country to the other. How much will hydrocarbon energy cost in 25 years? Will that cost have an impact on who will feed us? What do you think? Phone numbers today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. What about water? The CEO I listened to made a real interesting observation in his speech to the local Farm Bureau and the local farmers. He said, "Today, land is expensive and water is cheap. But tomorrow, land will be cheap and water expensive. That whole relationship of what is valuable will change in 25 years. Will there be enough water in 25 years to grow food and serve a rapidly blooming population of city folks? Will water have an impact on who feeds us in 25 years? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. What about population? We see in the news where the population of California, for but one example, is expected to double in 25 years. This means where there is now one person, there will be two. Where there are now 1 million people, there will be 2 million people, and so on. These new residents will pave over farmland to build their homes, because of course that's what people have always done. Will population affect who will feed us in 25 years? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. What kind of, the second question that I wanted to ask to help set this up, what kind of technology will emerge from the unknown to change the productivity of the food chain? And folks, there has been a lot of technology that has emerged over the past 50 years that has changed the nature of our food chain. Where we were once a rural agrarian society, we are now a metropolitan or urban society, and that change was really made possible by developments in the way we grow food. So let's look at some of those developments and think about how they might change our food chain. But how about genetic engineering? Will someone develop a tree that yields an endless supply of juicy cheeseburgers from the sandy desert soil? Sounds bizarre, doesn't it? But that's kind of the direction science is taking us. Who will own that cheeseburger tree? Will genetic engineering affect who will feed us in 25 years? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Green Revolution chemicals. Will a revitalized Green Revolution generate new chemicals that allow food to be grown in saltwater, for example? How much will those new chemicals cost? Will those new technologies affect who will feed us in 25 years? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. What about machines? Will someone invent a robot that does away with farm labor? How much will that robot cost? Will that robot determine who will feed us in 25 years? 800-624-2665 and 831-479-1080. And of course, this leads us to the ultimate question, which is, who will feed us in 25 years? Will it be the genetic engineers who will come to own patents on all of the crops grown for foods? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Will it be the giants of agribusiness whose economies of scale will allow them to purchase the government support they need to control production and distribution? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. And finally, will it be those farmers of 40 centuries, the little people of the world, who have always worked the land with the sweat of their brow to make it bring forth food? What do you think? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. 479-1080. This is the 600th edition of the Food Chain Radio program. We've been around for a long time. We had a great party to celebrate that fact yesterday with Carol and Parmalee, and Rolf was there and the whole crew, and we had a absolutely wonderful time celebrating that 600th show, which is right now. And on special occasions like this, it's always fun to kind of pause and reflect. And that's exactly what we're doing today. We're pausing to reflect on who will feed us in 25 years. And we ask you, who will do that job for us? What do you think? Pick up your phone and join us today. This is your program. It is the 600th edition, and it's all yours. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. We will be right back, and you will be the star of the show.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain. Michael Olson here. Today we're celebrating the 600th edition of the Food Chain radio program by pausing to reflect on the question, who will feed us in 25 years? Usually we have a guest in to tell a story and work from the guest. However, today we have the best guest of all, which is you. And we invite you to pick up your phone and join us. And as we discuss this question of who will feed us in 25 years, there's so much involved in that question. And it's kind of interesting to just step back once in a while and reflect on it. And that's exactly what we're doing today. So we're going to go to the phones and start right away. And the phone number is today, 800-624-2665. 831-479-1080. We have Pat on the line. Pat, welcome to the Food Chain.
Good morning, Michael, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Here's to 600 more of them.
You
do
Holy
a fine
smokes.
Job. You really do. That's not cheap flattery. I appreciate you, Shel.
Thank you.
We are discussing the future, and a lot of people seem to think it's going to get pretty ugly in the future, and of course, we don't want to just throw up our hands and say, what can you do? I personally feel that the idea that we just have to accept population growth as a given is our fatal flaw, because we don't have to accept that. I mean, if we prioritize stopping population growth like we prioritize countless other things, mm-hmm. we could stop it. And I don't think any of the techno fixes, however valid they may be in their own right, I don't think any techno fix, whether it's green or corporate or any other techno fix, is really going to bail us out when our population just keeps growing, because it's highly doubtful that we can sustain the people that are here right now, even if we never added another person.
Well, let me go back to the question then and pick up your theme. If we get control of our population, who will feed us in 25 years? And if we don't get control of our population, who will feed us in 25 years?
If our population doesn't stabilize and actually reduce to a sustainable level, I think who's going to feed us will be highly moot. I don't really think things are going to...
So you're saying if we don't get control of the population, we will not be able to feed ourselves?
Well, look at what's happening ecologically. I mean, the dead zones in the oceans are spreading geometrically.
Well, just a sec, for people who don't know what dead zones are, what are they?
There are zones where pesticide runoff and other contaminants from land that washes into the oceans ends up poisoning the water to the extent that other life no longer lives in these big stretches of the ocean.
Mm-hmm. You know,
there's 400 of these places now.
The first one I really experienced was off the island of Cyprus in the eastern Mediterranean. And I asked the local people if, you know, it must be a wonderful place to eat fish because you're an island in the sea. And they all looked at me like, are you kidding? There's no fish growing around here. There's nothing that's growing in the ocean anymore. And, of course, the reason is all of the things that are running off into the ocean kill the life in the ocean, so they become dead, and there you are. So
yeah, I've never been to Greece. A friend of mine went up Mount Olympus, said it's beautiful. They've got ancient forests and everything up there. It's like some of the most pristine places in the High Sierra, but the rest of Greece is kind of like much of the Mediterranean.
Denuded.
Yeah, I mean, it was actually forest land.
It looks like goats ate it all.
You don't think of the Mediterranean as being a forest land, but it was.
Yeah, it looks like goats ate it all. That's what the Mediterranean is looking like. So let me ask you this. Let me go back to the question. Look into the future, Pat, 25 years, and who do you see feeding us?
Well, if we get that far, food will be more localized because, as you say, the cost of transportation is going to make it prohibitive to continue doing things that we take for granted now. I'll miss bananas, I mean, but I expect they're going to get a lot more expensive. They're absurdly cheap when you consider how far they have to come and how fragile they are and how quickly they go bad. I mean, it's amazing that bananas can be raised that cheap, but that's to a large extent because third world people are growing this stuff for wages that really aren't fair. I mean, they should be making more money for that.
Do you think we'll be able to develop the technologies to grow things like we have with bananas? Do you think technology will pick us up and carry us it has in the past?
Yeah, we've always expected that technology will save us and humans are ingenious and look at Moore's Law and we'll think of something. And I like to think, you know, civilization's epitaph will be, we'll think of something. Just because we have in the past doesn't mean we're going to keep pulling these technological bunnies out of our hat forever. I mean, oil was a huge technological bunny to stumble upon, but when it's gone, it's gone. I mean, it's not necessarily assured that we're going to find a substitute for oil that's going to be anywhere near as bountiful as oil was.
You know, I think that too, but yet I just got my hands on an electric motorcycle, and this thing is absolutely amazing, and it leads me to think that maybe there is hope.
I'm not trying to suggest there's no hope. I'm just saying that I don't think it's realistic to assume that ignoring population growth and just pretending that, oh, throwing up our hands, that's a given. We can't do anything about that. We're just going to have to plan for it. That, to me, is that's the Achilles heel of civilization right there.
Do you ever hear of lifeboat ethics?
Yeah, Garrett Hardin was condemned widely for proposing them, but, I mean, it's a hard fact of ecology that, you know, you just can't keep growing, and when somebody insists on keep growing, do you just keep rewarding them, or do you have to say, wait a minute, if you aren't going to do your share to stop your growth, we aren't going to just keep enabling you? I mean, that's kind of what's going on. And in turn, a lot of the world is enabling our overconsumption, which is, you know, the world's.
So you think that the overwhelming determining factor will be the growth of population. Is that fair enough?
If we don't deal with that realistically, if we just keep ignoring it and pretending we can't do anything about it, yes.
Okay. Thank you very much, Pat,
yeah,
for the conversation. Appreciate it. Let's go quickly to Steve. Steve, welcome to the food chain.
Hey, Michael. My daughter just got back from Peru on a vacation.
One of my favorite places in the world,
the Inca
except for Lima.
3,000 years ago, the Inca were growing more per square meter than we're growing right now.
Mm-hmm.
3,000 years ago, Cargill and whatever don't have a clue. I mean, the guys in Iowa don't have a clue. We are using our land so wastefully. We could triple our production by using the methods that the Inca used, that the Moche used. It's unbelievable.
You know, there's a Secretary of Agriculture in the year 1800, I believe. His name was F.H. King, and he went to China to teach the Chinese how to use modern technology to grow more food. So he got over to China, and he took one look at how intensively the Chinese were using their land.
Yeah.
And he realized that they were getting at least 4 times more productivity out of their land using no implements of modern technology than we were here in the West with our big tractors and everything
else.
It's
unbelievable.
But then we had a lot of space to use. So looking forward, Steve, 25 years, who do you see feeding us?
I think production will go local. Instead of growing all our corn in Iowa and Nebraska, we're going to be growing it here again. You know, we grew corn in the Salinas Valley. We grew beans in the Salinas Valley. We grew potatoes in the Salinas Valley.
Well, that's what one of the largest, the CEOs of one of the largest concerns in the area says, that we won't be able to grow food from one side of the country and send it to the other. Steve, thank you for your call.
Okay.
Really appreciate it. Folks, this is the Food Chain. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to go to the phones and talk with Rory and Rich. And you, pick up your phones and join us. You are the expert today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. This is the 600th edition of the Food Chain, and it is all yours. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Grow our food in 25 years. Had an interesting conversation. I guess I was listening to a speech actually from a chief executive officer of one of the area's largest agricultural concerns. You, regardless of where you are in this great land of ours, you probably tasted his produce, the produce from his fields. And he was talking to the farmers of the area, the local growers. And he was saying that in 25 years, we will still be here growing food, but it will be a different kind of agriculture because we will no longer be growing food for people on the other side of the country. We will be growing food for our own metropolitan marketplace, which is the San Francisco Bay Metroplex, which is a huge, hungry marketplace when it gets right down to it. But where does that leave us consumers in 25 years? Who will be growing food for us? What do you think? The phone number is today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. This is the 600th edition of the Food Chain Radio, and this show is all yours. So pick up your phone and join us today, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Let's go to Rory. Rory, welcome to the Food Chain.
Yeah, Michael, congratulations on your show longevity.
Thank you.
It's a great show. I think, you know, as I hear about this, about the shipping, and believe me, we're talking about that amongst growers. I consult with growers. I'm not a direct farmer myself.
Well, what are we saying about shipping?
Well, the price has gone up. Like you said, it's gone from $2,000 a truck, $3,000 to $8,500. To get something from here to the East Coast. But my contention is this is an artificially induced shortage with the oil because we're not using our domestic oil supplies. We've got plenty of oil.
Mm-hmm. Is there a difference, Rory, between an artificially induced shortage and a shortage?
Sure. Yeah, the artificial means that it's not a real shortage. I mean, mm-hmm. if we were literally running out of oil, as we are told that we are, okay, there we would be in for a major crisis. Mm-hmm. The people in the cities aren't adept enough to do what they need to do to feed themselves. That's
right.
Just the way things are.
Right.
And you know that. You've talked about those trends for years.
Mm-hmm.
And apart from the madness of PAP population control theories, which I think are I think are self-destructive to a nation and to a people. You know, the real problem right now is that we're not getting at our own oil supplies, and we're creating an artificial shortage, which is driving the price up.
Mm-hmm.
People in eastern cities and the East Coast in general enjoy produce that we grow here, in particular none of the small fruits, strawberries, raspberries, that they can't necessarily get all year round,
right,
in the summer because it's too hot, and they have their short little periods. And people grow strawberries from Florida up through the Carolinas. It's just they can't grow them year round. So, you know, it's a nice thing to be able to get those fruits and vegetables year long. It's helpful for their diet, and, you know, adds variety. So my contention is we need to get at our own oil and utilize those oil sources. And we can do it in an ecological way. Geez, they drill for oil in the North Sea with almost no problems. And we're still worried about an oil spill that happened nearly 40 years ago in the Santa Barbara Channel that was using all this old technology.
Well, I know with maybe somebody else saw this happen too, that when the president mentioned that he was going to try his best to drill for oil, that the price of oil just started
tumbling.
And it was just the thought of that. So that would indicate to me that perhaps what you're saying about it being an artificial... But let me ask you this, Rory. You're an agriculturalist, a true professional. Looking into the future 25 years, who do you see feeding us and your children?
I think we will. And, you know, there's a myth that we're going to be relying on imported food. You can do that to a certain extent, but you're not going to get the variety and the freshness that we're used to, and there's always going to be demand for that.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, I mean, in the Salinas Valley, in the Pajaro Valley, we've got the capacity to supply the nation, or a good portion of the nation, with strawberries and raspberries. If we just go to the local market, you'll see a 1/100th of the acreage needed to do that. I mean, that's how big the scale is.
Right.
And there's, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. It's providing income, and it's providing a livelihood for a lot of people.
So
it has a lot of benefits.
Do you think we'll still be shipping strawberries to the East Coast in 25 years?
I hope so, Michael. Mm-hmm. It depends. Again, let's be smart about it. Let's use our homegrown energy supplies. If that morphs into, you know, electric trucks with massive batteries that can make the journey, great. You know, let's do it.
Okay.
We've got the climate here that they don't have that allows us to do this, and that's a natural thing that we're making use of, and it's a good thing.
Do you think they would be shipping strawberries in from Peru, for example?
They'll never make it, not fresh anyway. They can ship them in frozen. The other thing is, you spoke, or somebody was speaking of the Chinese and their production level.
Mm-hmm. That was in reference to small parcels of land.
Yeah, and you know, you can do that, but you have to be smart about plant disease issues and you got to be rotating.
That's what's so interesting.
Fumigating your soil.
That's what's so interesting about farmers to me. I kind of jokingly referred to the fact that I've never met a farmer who wasn't the most interesting person in the world. And I think the reason that I find them so interesting is because their knowledge base is so incredible. You know, they know a lot about a lot.
Yeah, you have to be informed, or you're just not going to survive in the business.
So you think we're still going to be growing food in the same way we are today in 25 years?
You know, Michael, I wouldn't say it would be in the same way, but we will be growing produce of some sort here. And, you know, it started out with sugar beets and hops. Mm-hmm. Gone in some of the higher value fruits, and that there's a lot of technology behind that. I mean, we use a lot of new techniques they didn't use 20 years ago. We introduced predatory mite.
You think technology is going to pick us up here? Do you think that genetic engineering is going to give us the leg up we need to survive?
You know, possibly, but that's a market question, and that, you know, if there's no market acceptability for genetically modified plants, then it'll be hard to make that acceptable.
Okay,
but right now, Michael, with just classic plant breeding, you can do a lot. And we've increased the production of strawberries per acre, you know, six times.
Yeah.
Sixfold in 30 years. And last thing I'll say about China, they've got a million strawberry growers on a million acres. Okay, and they have issues. They produce a lot of fruit, but it's a scale. But, you know, per acre, nobody beats California strawberry production worldwide.
There you
go. 2X, we're 2X the other developed nation strawberry production. And it's quite a thing. The last thing I'll say, Michael, with regards to population issues, because that is directly...
We'll say it really quickly, Rory.
Okay. But I'll leave it for another time.
All right, Rory, thank you so much for the phone call. Folks, this is The Food Chain, number 600. You are invited to participate, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. To the phones when we get back for Rich, Richard, Tom. Hey, where are the girls? Welcome back. This is the 600th edition of the Food Chain Radio, and today we're talking about, we're pausing to reflect, and we're reflecting on the question of who will feed us in 25 years. Who do you think will be feeding us in 25 years? 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Let's go to Rich. Rich, welcome to the Food Chain.
Welcome, and congratulations, and in another 12 and a half years, you can do a halfway version to that 25 years when you reach your 1,200th program.
Yeah.
That's assuming we survive the next 12 and a half years. Probably a nurse will be feeding me.
Yeah.
But I called in because I saw an article on WorldNet Daily. I don't know if she was able to pull it up or not.
Yes, she did.
Good. And it talks about this gentleman, I think his name was Bell, who's come up with this way of producing. He was watching his cows, and he saw how the cows were creating methane, and he said, if there's a way to speed up this biological process, well, he apparently discovered a way to do it. So now he can take all kinds of waste product, you know, foods and any carbon-based material, and turn that into oil with this process he has developed.
And if people want to check this out, they can Google Bell Bioenergy, Inc., and something will come up. But essentially what they're doing is they're establishing test facilities or demonstration production facilities at 7 major military bases around the United States.
Mm-hmm. So, them, and then one of them in San Pedro, I guess, was off of military.
Huh, interesting.
This is the way he's talking. He can start within 2 years, be up to full production, creating about a million barrels a day of oil out of all of this stuff, so restaurants can turn their stuff in. In other words, it'd be like our garbage being picked up. Now we're picking up all this stuff that can be turned into oil that he can process.
You know, interestingly enough, we were talking about China earlier, and they were always the experts at wasting absolutely nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And they would, you know, as a matter of fact, they would collect night soil, and they would always keep the night soil in covered buckets so that not a single nutrient would be lost to evaporation or what have you. And people would actually pay the governments of municipalities gold for the privilege of picking up night soil from public latrines.
Mm-hmm.
And we here in the United States have become world champion wasters. And perhaps something like this technology you're talking about will turn that around.
Well, back during World War II, everybody saved everything because we had to conserve everything. You know, war materials were needed.
Things
change, and we can do that if the population gets out of control. But, you know, even the population, I think, it's like the population of wild animals. They tend to grow and decline based on
what they have.
There's too many deer and not enough wolves, you know, then the wolves start to relent because there's more food.
Yeah.
And pretty soon the deer comes down. So
don't tell population Pat about the wolves part.
Okay.
Listen, Rich, who do you think is going to be feeding us in 25 years?
Well, I think we'll still be doing it ourselves. I think we'll be more efficient at it.
Yeah.
I think the population, like in the United States, has kind of tapered off now where we're basically replacing
It hasn't.
No,
we're growing
States,
like weeds. The population of just California, for example, is
expected
to double.
Well, that's because of all the immigration, though.
Yeah?
That's because of the immigration. But
well, does it make a difference how you grow as long as you're growing?
Well, that's a problem that has to be solved another way. But the population of the United States of U.S. citizens has basically gotten into a replacement situation versus third world countries, which are constantly being overpopulated. So, you know, the rest of the world may have difficulty feeding itself, but I don't think we'll have that problem here, and we'll always have farmers, obviously.
Okay. So you're optimistic?
I'm optimistic.
Just don't tell Pat about the wolves, and we'll be okay. Thanks for the call, Rich. Appreciate it.
Bye.
But from Rich to Richard. Whoops, I just blew it. Richard, call back. I pressed the wrong button. And if you call back, I'll pick you right up. Let's go to Tom. Tom, welcome to the food chain.
Yeah, thanks. Hey, I just kind of wanted to follow up a little bit on some of Rory's thinking and kind of reading between the lines with saying that, you know, I think that the future, at least for California agriculture, 25 years out, is pretty well in place today, and that the complexity of our systems and government regulation and the food safety controls and everything is so complex that you ended up with is, you know, large corporate farming companies, marketing companies, and the farming is being done by specialists. So you don't really have, you know, kind of farmers. You've got specialists. You got people
right.
to fertilizer. You've got people to do pest control. You got people to do irrigation management.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more of farming
by contractors, right?
Well, by contractors or by kind of a group corporate structure. That manages the farms, and then at some level you have the actual people out that actually, you know, turn the valves on and off
okay.
and the sprinklers.
That's but, obviously the way it is. But let me ask you this, Tom. Is that complexity a strength or a weakness?
Well, see, to me, personally, I think it's a weakness, but until what it's doing is feeding the corporate food marketing system, and as long as you know, a high percent, the majority of your food products move through, you know, three or four national retailers, you can't really deconstruct the farming side of it because the farming side's feeding that mm-hmm. that monster, you know, in that sense. You know, and to that point, I think you'll see with the fuel deal, you'll see regionalization like you used to have at some level, you know, stuff spread more around the United States, but that's still going to be done by large corporations.
Ah.
Because you can't, if you build a marketing plan, let's say, to feed Walmart, okay?
Right.
You want to do something regionally to take advantage of fuel costs and this and that, you still have to be able to feed into that Walmart marketing plan and meet
hey,
those.
Tom, I have to go to a quick break.
Sure.
Can you hold?
Sure.
Okay, we'll pick up Tom and Richard when we get back. This is The Food Chain, the 600th edition of The Food Chain, and it's all yours. Please do stay tuned. So much to cover and so little time, but we're just having a great time anyway. This is the 600th edition of The Food Chain. Michael Olson, your host, and this is your show. Tom, we're talking a little bit about how, because of oil and whatnot, we're looking at regionalization of our agriculture, but that regionalization will also boil down to being dominated by corporate agriculture. Fair enough?
Yeah, I think that's you know, my thinking on it.
Simply because of the complexity involved in serving customers like Walmart.
Right, because you've got to meet the standards. You've got to have packaging standards. You've got your food safety standards. The whole system has to be in place. And it's got to be seamless from production area to production area from the standpoint of somebody like Walmart. Right. They don't want to be bothered with the issues that we might have growing the product in California versus...
Yeah.
You know, Mexico versus Florida.
Texas what they want most is uniformity.
Yeah, uniformity and consistency and timeliness of the product, and that takes a huge structure to pull that off nationwide.
And to do that, you have to be complex.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
confusing.
yeah.
Tom, thank you for the call. I really appreciate it.
All right.
You
very
are
good.
The man. Appreciate All it. Right. Bye bye. Let's go to Richard. Richard, thank you for holding on there, and I'm sorry I bumped you accidentally a while back, but welcome to the food chain.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I can't wait till the 666 program, huh?
666. Strange number there, Richard.
That's going to be a strange program. But I'll tell you what, the problem we got right now is these brokers, these produce brokers, these food brokers. It's not the farmer. It's not the people... selling the food in the market or the people buying the food.
It's the broker.
It's not even a middleman. I drive around with these clowns and they go, Richard, look at this. I own that farm, I own that farm, I own that farm, I own that, that, that. And they don't own anything. Other people own the property. They just happen to be buying the fruit that those farmers are going to be growing.
Mm-hmm.
They're speculating into the future and all this nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, 25 years from now, we're going to be eating out of Knox boxes. You know?
Well, I'm
mean,
for that.
We're going to be feeding ourselves.
Do you think there's anything wrong with that?
No, it's going to get to the point where the local farmer is going to go down, you're going to do the farmer's market thing like we've been doing, and we're going to get rid of that middleman in the farmer's market even.
Hmm.
There's one in there, isn't there?
Well, I hope not, because I always look forward to having those people grow my food. I made the comment earlier, Richard.
No, I'm talking about the people that are running the farmer's markets. Oh, you got police, you got the cities, you got all this government involved in it, man. And
yeah.
Then you got to have a permit to go in there and sell something. If you don't have this permit to sell something, you don't get in there.
Or you have to open up your own market.
And or if you don't have a permit on that piece of fruit, you can't sell it there.
Yep.
You know, this is where it's going. We're nitpicking.
Well, then the solution to that,
if you don't want
to cope with those things, is that you have to grow your own food.
No, here's the solution. You get me a young man and a young woman and Bruce Wolper and you in a room, and I'll show you the future.
Okay.
That's all it takes, Mike.
I'll see
you, buddy.
Thank you very much for the call, Richard. Holy smokes, that was the 600. What do you think, Rolf? Who's going to feed us in 25 years?
It will remain a complex picture.
It will. And here's my notion, folks. I believe agriculture, like all industry, is growing in two directions. It's getting very, very big and very, very small. And so I think that there will be very large corporations that are providing us with food, and I think that there will be very small farmers who are taking care of us as well. And you will decide who will thrive with your money. So choose wisely. This has been the 600th edition of The Food Chain. Thank you all so much for tuning in. And join us next week for more What's Eating What Radio.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.